Oh, what a beautiful day, ladies and gentlemen. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, this 24th day of July. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of the radio program of record. If you want to shoot me a text or a phone call, feel free, 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. A reminder, in 2 hours' time, again, we continue our weekly giveaway of a free trip somewhere. I mean, we've gone to Great Britain, Nashville. We've gone, oh my goodness.
Wyoming for ranch experience.
That was like the Wyoming ranch experience.
Yeah.
We've had the cruise to Mexico. And this week, we've got Napa. And if you love wine country, four-night trip. But if you don't like Napa, you don't like California, you don't like wine, you could just keep the cash. Yeah. That's $3,000.
Gives me reasons to explore the wine country classics.
We remember this one.
One more here.
Three Dog Night.
Kisses sweeter than the wine.
Such influence all those years that it's calling the Napa trip to win.
So anyway, I'm going to give out, I'm going to tell you what the word of the morning is in 2 hours' time. When I do, just text it to the number I gave you a few moments ago, our regular call-in text-in line, 206-421-5757, and you're automatically entered. It's just that simple. Easier and cheaper than a lottery ticket. Okay. But not only do we have our take the trip or keep the cash contest, it's Wednesday. You know what that means? Our world famous legendary lyric, I have a little hyperbole there, legendary lyric contest, where I give you the lyric of a classic American hit. And when you hear that lyric going in or out of commercial break, be the 10th caller. Be the 10th caller. Tell us the song, and you win the prizes. And what do we got this week?
Always unique. We're always going to include food. And what better than Daniel's Broiler? Four locations here. Locations Bellevue, downtown Seattle. Leschi, keep it in mind here. We're getting close to the Hydros and the Air Show. South Lake Union. Dine in, take out, delivery, and do your a reservation online, which is so cool. Just look at the website, danielsbroiler.com. All right. Tickets. His name is Lee Bryce. He's going to be at Marymore Park. Give a listen.
I still be driving that old green Nova. I probably never would have heard of yoga.
This was his number one hit. First one. Got 18 singles, 8 number ones. He's written music for Garth Brooks, Tim McGraw, Eli Young Band, John, Phil. He's another guy that went to college on a football scholarship, Clemson University. Skilled as a long snapper.
Good team.
Beat up his arm too much, had to make a change of path, so it's country music. Lee Bryce, tickets for Marymore Park. This will be for Friday, August 2nd, right there in the middle of Seafair weekend.
It's a beautiful venue for a concert.
I'd go just to the venue experience at Marymore.
There are three wonderful venues in East King County. There is, of course, the San Michele Winery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's Marymore Park. And now, I don't know if you guys have been out to Carnation Remlinger Farms. They've got a concert venue as well.
Had friends that went to a concert maybe 3 weeks ago.
So if you want to go to a really great show, but you don't want to have to deal with 27,000 people.
Well, and they have good vendors there, too, with the beverage and
much
the food.
Smaller venues.
Good
yes.
time of the year for the nice weather. And Lee Bryce.
Perfect summertime concert. Great. So you get the concert tickets, and you get the steak. So you got the $50 gift card from Daniel's Broiler. Okay. Here is your legendary lyric. Take your passion and make it happen. Pictures come alive. You can dance right through your life. One more time. Take your passion and make it happen. Pictures come alive. You can dance right through your life. That was from a classic hit more than 40 years ago. In fact, it was a number one hit around the world. That's as much as I'm going to tell you.
And I'm looking forward to the story behind this because I was right on this one. Mm-hmm. But now I want to know what the story is about why you selected these legendary lyrics.
All right.
I'm hoping it's a great story like all your others.
Okay, so it's coming your way. All right, it's a busy program, as you can imagine. We're going to mix and meld some local and national news because, for crying out loud, that's what I specialize in is local stuff, but there's so much breaking national news. As I said to you yesterday, there has been more political turmoil and more political upheaval in the last month than we have seen in entire election years. In fact, probably more turmoil in a short period of time than we have seen since the spring and summer of 1968. And most of the turmoil there was just awful. But anyway, we have a fascinating article in the Wall Street Journal about the decline of Joe Biden and when it first became evident. Do you know the first time people began to take note of Joe Biden's seeming cognitive decline? The latest spin on this, of course, is, oh, in just the last few months, we've noticed a decline, and it really came out during the debate. You know when it really was being noticed for the first time? June of 2021. June of 2021 at the Group of Seven Summit. This is where, you know, seven major Western powers gather every year. They gathered in England, again, just less than 6 months after taking office. Biden repeatedly mixed up the nations of Syria and Libya at a news conference. And since it was Biden's first summit, it was more or less shrugged at. Yeah, and you know, I screwed up and I confused the names. In the spring of 2022, less than a year later, this, according to a great piece in the Wall Street Journal entitled "How the Bet on an 81-year-old Joe Biden Turned into an Epic Miscalculation." The bet, of course, being placed by Democratic Party power brokers. In the spring of 2022, some European officials began to notice something might be amiss. Biden was chairing an online video call on Ukraine with the G7 leaders. It was a discussion where Biden was calling on one leader at a time to give a statement. Sitting in the Oval Office, Biden forgot to unmute his mic, lost his train of thought, and began mumbling. He then appeared to lose the order of which leader should speak next, and then tried to end the conference call without calling on the president of France. That would be President Macron, Emmanuel Macron, at the time. He's out now. The Prime Minister of Canada had to intervene to remind him. On April 25th of 2023, Biden announced that he would run for re-election, declaring, "Let's finish the job." He did this just days after an NBC News survey found that 7 out of 10 voters, including a majority of Democratic voters, didn't want Biden to run again. Part of the reason was his record. Part of the reason was his age. About half of the surveyed voters cited his age. After the 2022 midterms, so this was November of 2022, Representative Adam Smith, here from Washington State, approached some senators and some people in the White House, which was, shouldn't somebody run against Joe? Smith talked to one person who could conceivably be a candidate who said, absolutely not, quote, we've got to stick with Joe, close quote. The potential candidate Congressman Smith was talking with said that a messy primary fight would be pointless and told Adam Smith, we did it in 2020 with this coalition. It's too risky to build a new coalition or to build that coalition around a different candidate, which, by the way, is exactly what they are now trying to do with Kamala Harris. Another congressman who raised concerns about this, including Dean Phillips from Minnesota, said they were outright warned they would be blackballed if they worked with anyone other than Biden. So in other words, Biden made it very clear he was running for another term, knowing full well that a large majority of Americans didn't want him to run for another term, and that they were noticing even back then that his age was an issue, while the people around him continued to insist, no, there's no problem. One example of circling the wagons was the Democratic governor of Minnesota, Tim Walz, who dismissed concerns about Biden's age. Everyone who says, I wish he was younger, well, I wish I was skinnier. There's a responsibility for us not to buy into that. Think about what he just said. There's a responsibility for us not to buy into that. What he's calling that happens to be the truth, that he was old and infirm and has no business running. But he said, there's a responsibility for us not to buy into that. There's a responsibility for us not to do what is clearly the right thing to do. By July of 2023, 1 year ago, Biden's schedule was being tightly reduced and controlled. At a NATO summit in Lithuania, some diplomats began talking among themselves about how Biden's exposure was being much more limited and restricted by his team. Quote, looking back, it was noticeable last year, i.e. Biden's decline. By the end of 2023, according to the Journal, murmurs among Democrats about Biden's condition had begun to grow. Donors who had met with Biden out west over the summer of 2023, a year ago, said the president appeared confused and disoriented at times. At a fundraiser in the fall, Biden told the same anecdote twice. At a White House Christmas party, a number of lawmakers from Capitol Hill came away concerned about what they saw as a deterioration in his health. Less than 3 weeks into the new year, top lawmakers from both parties met with Biden at the White House to discuss Ukraine. Several noticed that Biden spoke so softly that people struggled to hear him. He had to read from notes to make rather obvious points. He would pause, saying nothing, for extended periods, and sometimes closed his eyes for so long some people in the room wondered whether he had tuned out. quote from Adam Smith, who was in the room. He started looking like he was struggling more physically and mentally, probably by about the end of last year, to a greater degree than it had been before. At a campaign rally on February 4th, Biden referred to President Macron of France as François Mitterrand, who was the French leader during the Reagan era. He had died back in 1996. 3 days later, he mixed up the name of former German Chancellor Angela Merkel with former Chancellor Helmut Kohl, who again served during the Reagan era. He died in 2017. The point to all this is that there is a clear record of decline here, that the White House reacted viscerally, angrily, emotionally, because they couldn't address this logically and reasonably. So it's basically stop asking. The journal interviewed more than half a dozen senior administration officials just a few months ago after learning that Biden had showed ongoing signs of aging. The officials uniformly denied that Biden's acuity had declined and insisted he was as sharp as ever. Those conversations included an hour-long interview in May with a senior administration official who disputed the notion that Biden's health was a problem and insisted that Biden was working harder than his staff. And then, of course, the fatal blow, the June 27th debate, where basically America saw what all of these toadying administration officials jealously guarding their access to power had seen for many months and had repeatedly lied to cover up. So that is why the Democrats had to scramble and do something that has never happened before in American history. A candidate for president who had the necessary delegates, easily had the delegates to secure the nomination, leaves the race 2 weeks before the convention. Philip J. Vandervoort III, right around the corner with a social media sweep, a busy morning as we got the legendary lyric contest and the Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest going as well. Benjamin Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel, in Washington, D.C., will be speaking to a joint session of Congress. The Vice President Kamala Harris will not be Lazy days, right? Beautiful. All right. Philip J. Vandervoort III, can you top
I can.
That?
Are you ready? Lazy days unless you work in the White House. Okay, thank you very much. I'll be
actually,
here
lazy
week.
Days, especially if you work in the White House.
Depends on what section you're in, I guess. Sure,
depends,
right?
Depends what if you hold an office, if you're elected to be there.
Yeah.
On both sides of the ticket, work ethic not really at the top of the list.
Yeah. Biden on TV, by the way, 5 o'clock.
Good reminder
for why he left or dropping
5 o'clock
the races.
Pacific.
Yep.
Listen during Ari's show; he'll be having it.
I'm just hoping 4 minutes into his speech. I dropped out. I dropped out.
Oh,
all
man,
right.
It's going to turn into a Saturday Night Live sketch, isn't it?
All right, here we go.
The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Fox Digital News has posted an encounter with the attempted Trump assassin's father, Matthew Crooks, walking out of a grocery store. Ostensibly, this is Bethel Park, Pennsylvania, although it isn't given a specific location. But you're going to hear a couple of reporters that are standing, I don't know, 15, 20 feet away from Matthew Crooks as he pushes a grocery cart to a car. And then you're going to hear the voice of another person, seems to be a woman, is masked up and has a jacket hood over their head, I guess, again, ostensibly to try and prevent people from identifying the other person, that gets a little chippy and tells him to leave him alone. But here's how it all sounded with this encounter that was just posted by Fox.
Matthew, why would your son want to kill the president?
Back off.
No comment.
No comment.
Were there any warning signs, Matthew?
No comment.
How's Mary holding up?
No comment.
We'll release a statement when our legal counsel advises us to do so. Until then, we have no comment. We just want to try to take care of ourselves right now. So please give us our space.
They'll release a statement, he says, when counsel advises him it's okay to do so. And as Mark mentioned about President Biden's national address tonight, the FBI director, Christopher Wray, is going to be testifying in front of the House Judiciary Committee today. So the expectation is that Christopher Wray will update the rest of the nation, or at least the congressional members, on what we're learning, if we're learning anything so far, about 20-year-old Thomas Crooks, the attempted assassin.
Man, I hope he has better luck than Kim Cheadle did yesterday at the Secret Service.
Hopefully Ray
Secret
doesn't
Service
have to resign after it all.
Yesterday.
And then quick music note, a musician's musician, John Mayall, famous for John Mayall and the Blues Breakers, passed away. Born in 1933, he was 90 years old. Musician John Mayall, often referred to as the godfather of the British blues. John Mayall and the Blues Breakers famously spawned Eric Clapton, amongst others.
John McVie, who went on with Fleetwood Mac.
Martha Quinn, the longtime MTV VJ, she said, "He's the Zeus of British blues. Many of the greats came through his band." Mm-hmm. Clapton, Peter Green, Mick Taylor. "He didn't need to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because he was one of its architects."
Ooh! Very well said. Who said that again?
Martha Quinn
from MTV VJ days,
like,
back in the 80s.
The female Dick Clark. She just is ageless.
Yeah, you know? You listen to K-Jet here in Seattle at midday, Martha Quinn.
That's right.
She's the one popping the peas on the microphone all day.
Syndicated show, but yeah.
It's 6:30 on The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. A little bit later on, I will give you my endorsements for all statewide offices in the primary election. Yes, there's an election going on here in Washington State, believe it or not. And we're back at 24 minutes to 7 o'clock on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, and so glad you are aboard. All righty. Our legendary lyric contest underway. A couple of great prizes coming for you. If you are the 10th caller, when you hear this lyric going in or out of commercial break from a classic American hit, take your passion and make it happen. Pictures come alive. You can dance right through your life. Do you recognize that lyric? Take your passion and make it happen. Pictures come alive. You can dance right through your life. All right. Kamala Harris ran for president in 2020. She started out pretty good. She started out well. But her first day as a candidate was her best day as a candidate. It all went downhill from there. It went downhill for a reason. And Kellyanne Conway, who was the first woman to successfully manage a presidential race in America, isn't it interesting how you don't hear this all the time? The media don't say, Kellyanne Conway, the first woman to successfully manage a presidential race. It's because,
oh, it doesn't count.
Because the candidate was Donald Trump.
Yeah, political candidate from a party we don't appreciate.
2016. Anyway, she was talking the other day with Sean Hannity and said, there are some politicians good on substance but bad on style. Some who are great on style but terrible on substance. Kamala is terrible on both.
Kamala Harris led the chorus of liars every single day, pretending that Joe Biden is a trapeze artist or a triathlete behind the scenes. And then we all see what we know, what we see with our own two eyes. And that's just not true. Why did Kamala Harris or anybody else who's thinking of running for president or vice president, Sean, lack the courage, integrity, and love of country to just say, listen, I love this man. I want him to step aside and spend the rest of his years. Let's hope there are 20, 30 more years, Joe Biden, in Delaware with his family. If you don't like the style of Kamala Harris, if cackling Kamala bothers you, if you see her with the word salads, if you don't like her style, wait till America learns her substance. This is somebody who ran for president in 2020. She had such a big rollout. She was 15% of the polls. She had huge endorsements, raised a ton of money, and fell out of that top tier fairly quickly because people got to know her and hear her. She didn't get a single delegate. She had disastrous staff turnover as vice president. I check it on the daily. Her public schedule, gentlemen, rarely has anything on it or one or two things on it.
In other words, like Joe Biden, she keeps a low profile. She keeps a low profile because she's done so badly when she's in unscripted moments with reporters. We played you the, just as one example, the Lester Holt appearance where he asked when she's going to come to the border, when, as the borders are, when are you going to visit the border? And she was annoyed with the question and said four times, we have been to the border. We've been to the border. He said, yeah, but you haven't. And then she responds with that annoying cackle of hers and said, I haven't been to Europe either. What's the point? Well, I think the point is you're the border czar and you haven't been to the border. We have also come to learn that Kamala Harris not only hasn't been to the border, she hasn't talked to the guy in charge of the border. Raul Ortiz was his name for 2 years, and she hasn't talked to his replacement either. Some borders are. The other thing that's very interesting is that if you want a clue about Kamala Harris's politics, Kamala Harris was one of the only United States senators who was more liberal than Bernie Sanders. Let me say that again. She was to the left of Bernie Sanders when she was in the Senate. You're talking about, say, how about free health care for illegal immigrants? She's for it. She said so on tape. How about free taxpayer-provided attorneys for illegal immigrants so they can stay in the country that they entered illegally? When there were terrible riots following the killing of George Floyd in May of 2020, Kamala Harris, and they were trying to arrest the violent rioters, the more greedy of some of the looters. There were certainly no nonviolent protesters exercising civil disobedience who were arrested. The people who were arrested were arsonists, were people engaged in assault, people engaged in widespread property destruction and widespread looting. Kamala Harris's response to the riots was to publicize a bail fund to get them out of jail. So all these shopkeepers, all these businesses, seeing their establishments ruined, buildings going up in flames, people being assaulted and killed, and Kamala Harris's instinct was to help the people the police arrested make bail. That's what people need to know about Kamala Harris. Here is Todd Benzman from the Center for Immigration Studies, another issue that she took a militant position on. So during the violent social justice upheavals of 2019-2020, Kamala Harris, then a Democratic primary candidate for president and a freshman senator, told America exactly where she stood on illegal border immigration. Just 1 week after ICE agents killed an Antifa terrorist named Wilhelm Van Spronson. That happened here in Pierce County in Washington State. He attempted to kill ICE agents at a detention facility. 1 week after the ICE agents killed him before Spronson could kill them and found his radical manifesto, Senator Harris responded with a tweet that mainstreamed his demand in the manifesto that there be an end to private detention centers. Quote, "Let's be clear, private prisons are making money off the incarceration and suffering of human beings. One of my first acts of business as president will begin phasing out detention centers and private prisons." She reiterated that in June of 2019. She wanted to abolish ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. She wanted to end all deportation and detention. She wanted to grant citizenship to millions of people who came here illegally. She vowed to stop the border wall that President Trump had started to build, which, of course, Joe Biden made good on. She said she would extend U.S. asylum access to anyone who made it to our border so they could stay and then disappear. So this is the kind of person, this is how radical she is on this issue. You're talking about the southern border. How did it get like that? Basically, the Biden administration was doing a lot of the stuff that Kamala Harris was calling for as a candidate for president. So I am so glad, since the border is a major issue in people's minds, that the person largely responsible for the border being like it is now going to be the Democrats' nominee for president. Cannot wait for this issue to rise during the next few months of this campaign. Lars Larson checking in with us right around the corner, 12 minutes to set. Lars Larson isn't strange.
No, but we live in strange times, Johnny.
Oh, do we ever. Lars Larson, our noon to three host. Good morning, Lars.
Good morning, John. What's on your mind? Because I've got a ton of things on mine. But
well, did you see the latest gal? We've been talking about Kamala Harris and her position on all aspects of the border issue and illegal immigration. And it, I don't know if you've seen the poll that just came in recently from Gallup. But the Gallup poll on immigration asked respondents whether they prefer immigration levels to rise, fall, or stay the same.
Yep.
Of those who want, a majority of those polled, 55%, want immigration restricted and reduced. Yep. That is a 14-point increase in 1 year, virtually unprecedented.
And consider the numbers. I always throw this at people. They say, well, we want immigration. I say, I do too. At what level? And they say, what do you mean? I said, during Reagan, it was about 300,000 per year. During Clinton, it rose to about 600,000. Obama topped 900,000, eventually topped 1 million. So now we're triple the in-migration to the country that we were just, say, 30 years ago. Which level is the right level, and which, and to use a liberal word, which one is sustainable? How many people can we take in and basically, you know, get them to learn what, how we do things in America and not change our culture? Yes. I don't want our culture to be the one where 14-year-old girls are sexually available to adult men. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of things south of the Rio Grande, 14-year-old girls are sexually available as one example. Yep. Of culture I don't want in my country.
One more sign of trafficking. Absolutely correct. Again, the Gallup poll showing 55% of Americans want immigration reduced. Only 16% want it increased. That is a 3.5-to-1 ratio in favor of reducing rather than increasing, Lars Larson.
Thank you, John.
Our audience will be listening to Lars as well, noon to three today on The Commute with Carlson, hour number two, right around the corner. It's 3 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning in the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you very much for joining us. Let us start this hour on the local news front. There's a whole lot of stuff happening locally that we need to get to, we haven't got to, because of all this incredible news that has been breaking out on the national front. Also, a reminder, in 1 hour, I will have your secret word of the morning for our Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest. And while we're doing that, we are also doing our legendary lyric contest. And you know how that works. I give you a lyric to a classic hit song. And when you hear that lyric going in or out of commercial break, simply be the 10th caller, identify the song, and you win big time. You win a gift card to the delectable, delicious Daniel's Broiler Steakhouse.
Always going to have food when you have a contest like this. So there you go with the steaks. Lee Bryce, brand new country artist, 18 singles released. He's got like 8 number ones, wrote for Garth Brooks, Tim McGraw, had a scholarship for Clemson University to play football, skilled as a long snapper, hurt his arm, had to change path. Wait till you see his performance at Merrimore Park. Lee Bryce, August 2nd. Country fans, you know who I'm talking about? You're going to love
him. Oh, they know him. No, he's a fast rising star in the country world.
Born around the time you and I finished high school.
It is. It's one of those concerts, Mark.
Yes.
Where you're lucky to see him in this venue.
Yes.
Because this time next year, he'll be playing like Climate Pledge, mm-hmm. or he'll be playing a much bigger concert venue.
It's like when Garth Brooks did the Ballard Firehouse for $10 tickets.
Yes.
2 years later. Look out.
Or when Nora Jones, played Merrimore early in her career, and then boom, she wins all these Emmys. So anyway, that is going to be, again, August 2nd?
Seifert, right in the middle of the Hydros, August 2nd on Friday night, before we get to the races of the Hydros near show Saturday, Sunday. Mary Moore, August 2nd. Lee Bryce, two tickets.
All right, two tickets and the gift card to Daniel's Broiler. Here is your lyric. Take your passion and make it happen. Pictures come alive. You can dance right through your life. One more time. Take your passion and make it happen. Pictures come alive. You can dance right through your life. All right, there you go. An 18-year-old accused of fatally shooting a 13-year-old. Now facing formal charges, here's Como 4's Molly Shen.
The charging documents say that Faisal Abdullahi chose the time and place for the armed robbery, had a getaway driver, and arrived early so he and his friends could stage themselves before the victims arrived. Matthew Stevkovwe and his friends went to Turnkey Park to sell a camera. They were all held at gunpoint before the shooting. Abdullahi is charged with first-degree murder and first-degree robbery. He is expected in court for arraignment on August 5th.
Okay. So we have that story. And then you probably heard about the shooting at one of the Seafair neighborhood parades. Was this the one in Chinatown?
I was going to say, let me cue this one up. It wasn't a shooting, but three juveniles, I believe ages 13 and 14, the combination of the three of them, ages 13 and 14, were arrested for gun possession. And Como 4's Hannah Knowles has that story.
Two 14-year-olds and a 13-year-old would be carrying loaded, illegal, and two of them modified to make them semi-automatic handguns at a parade in South Seattle. Prosecutors tonight asking the judge to keep these teens in custody because of the threat that they pose to the community.
Once officers arrived, they quickly located the three teens, each of them carrying a loaded handgun. Two of the three firearms reported stolen, and two had been modified to be fully automatic.
That's the last parade. I think it's at night, 7 p.m. on Sunday is when they had the parade in Chinatown.
Okay. Yeah, I thought they capped off around. I'm glad that...
My understanding, no shots, but the youngsters were witnessed with guns, and then that's when everyone, the crowd kind of went into a panic. People scrambled and called 911.
Okay, and again, the guns doctored to make a semi-automatic gun into an automatic pistol. What is the difference between the two? A semi-automatic firearm is a gun where you pull the trigger and it expels one round, one shot, one bullet. So you have to pull the trigger four times in order to fire four shots, four bullets, four rounds. An automatic is far more lethal and dangerous. You pull the trigger and keep it depressed. You just pull the trigger and you don't let it go, and it just keeps spitting out bullets. Think machine gun. That's an automatic weapon, and those are illegal unless you have a special permit. And that's what these young teens were doing. So here we have a very interesting piece, a big, long piece in the Seattle Times this morning. It says, many more kids are being shot and killed in King County in 2024. Say at least 17 children, I would put the word children in air quotes. There's a huge difference between an 8-year-old girl and a 17-year-old gang member. But anyway, at least 17 children under 18 have been killed in homicides so far this year in King County. More than double the number of juvenile homicide victims in all of 2023. So there are already twice as many juvenile homicide victims this year than there was in all of 2023. So only halfway through the year, and were twice as many as in all of last year. That includes a 15-year-old boy gunned down in the parking lot of the Brookside Village Apartments in unincorporated Auburn last week. Four other deaths of juveniles are being investigated as homicides, but the King County Medical Examiner's Office is still determining the manner of death. Now, here's the interesting part. They quote a couple of senior deputy prosecutors who chair the King County Prosecutor's Office Most Dangerous Offender Program. Quote, they said they can't say exactly why the first half of the year has seen such a dramatic shift to more young victims and suspects. Close quote. And it turns out there is an irony there. The number of people who have been killed in King County is lower, slightly lower at this time last year than last year. So overall, homicides are down, but juvenile homicides are up. Juvenile homicides have gone up while overall homicides have gone down. At least 17 of this year's victims. So it's almost a little under 1 in 3 have been juveniles. Why is this happening? And here we get the Seattle Times telling us, well, it's all about guns, easy access to guns, the proliferation of untraceable ghost guns, switches that turn semi-automatic handguns into machine guns, what we're just talking about here with Philip J. in that story on Como. Young people's love of gun content on social media, they all appear to be fueling the deadly trend, say the prosecutors, John Castleton and Mary Barbosa. It's very noticeable, says Castleton. It's tough because we're seeing this more than we ever have before. Then they quote Sue Rahr. Sue is the interim police chief of Seattle, who thinks that the lingering effects of school closures and interruptions during COVID, coupled with the, quote, ridiculous availability of guns, close quote, is driving the violence. She says it's now to the point where a lot of people carry guns, juveniles carry guns, not because they are intent on committing violence, but they're intent on defending themselves. And again, here's an irony for you. Seattle police have seized fewer guns so far this year than they did in the first half of last year. What's going on? Well, Sue says, Chief Rahr here, that the ridiculous availability of guns. Why are guns so available to juveniles? Well, what's the penalty if you carry a gun and you're a juvenile? It's illegal. What's the penalty? There ain't none. There's no penalty. If you are caught carrying a handgun, you lose the gun. They take the gun, but they don't even book you into juvie hall. They will give you diversion rather than charge you with a crime. You have to be found with an illegal gun more than five times. Five separate times you have to be caught with an illegal gun before you face any potential time in juvenile hall. Or face charges that would send you to Echo Glen or Green Hill, which are the institutions for juvenile delinquents. What on earth makes the elite, the King County political establishment, think that you can get tough on juvenile gun violence, but go easy on juvenile gun possession? How is that even possible? How can you decry gun violence and then shrug your shoulders at 13 and 14-year-olds carrying guns? It is not possible. It is the perfect example of what you call a mixed message. You're saying that guns, particularly in the hands of juveniles, are completely unacceptable. And then when they're caught, there's no punishment. You know what that says to the juvenile with a gun? It's not unacceptable. It's perfectly acceptable. They don't do anything. They caught a kid with a gun in school. Pulled out a gun in school. And he was not charged. He received diversion. This is the progressive brainchild of Dan Satterberg and Jimmy Hung. Dan Satterberg has left the prosecutor's office, did terrible damage there. He is the architect of this program, which has spawned all of this juvenile crime violence. Much of it aimed at other juveniles. But sometimes, you know, you've got a completely innocent. A lot of the violence is between warring factions of juveniles, gang members mostly, but there's also people caught in the crossfire. 2-year-old kid killed. Stray bullet. There are people who have been carjacked at gunpoint by 13 and 14-year-olds. So the crimes are vicious, they are brutal, they are violent, and because we're talking about teenage kids, often volatile. But the message of the Washington State Legislature and King County's political establishment, which is, again, just a one-party rule, is that actual gun possession or gun theft by juveniles is not a big deal. As I mentioned, the kid who was caught with a gun at school received diversion, meaning he was not criminally charged and instead was sentenced to talk it out and understand what he did caused harm and pain to so many people. This new enlightened, progressive approach to juvenile crime has coincided with, as the Seattle Times is pointing out here, an explosion in juvenile crime, particularly violent crime. Because when you don't meet resistance for committing low-level crimes, you often graduate to more severe crimes. More severe types of robbery. And eventually, you either get caught or you get shot. And when you get caught, you have to be charged at this point because now you're committing serious felonies. And what do you know? Instead of having fewer juveniles in jail, we have more of them in jail. So by anyone's measurement of a successful program, this diversion program in our juvenile justice in King County is an absolute abject failure. It not only isn't making things better, it is making them aggressively worse. It's easy to see this. And of course, everything I just told you is missing from this story. Not a word about this controversial program. Not a word about the leniency for juveniles caught with guns. So the media are now part of the problem. In a long, long article exploring the roots of this problem, they never get around to mentioning the two factors that I've just mentioned. Next to no penalties for juvenile gun possession or gun theft, and a ridiculous diversion program that has cultivated and accelerated a rise in juvenile crime.
John, remember the text I sent you real quick, Washington State Ferries? It wasn't fireworks detected during the 4th of July. They said the issue was firearms that were detected by the canines, did not give an age.
It's 21 minutes after 7 o'clock, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vandenberg III right around the corner with a social media sweep. Good morning. I know you got it.
Indeed, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. The Seattle Times has posted a story about a new poll asking voters what they think about this long-term care payroll tax, the 0.58 cent payroll tax that comes out of your paycheck every month. You did not have a chance to opt into. You were forced into it if you didn't already have a long-term care plan. And the Seattle Times was conducted by Survey USA.
Yes.
And it says about 52% of voters polled support Initiative 2124. This is the ballot measure that would make it an opt-in and a tax optional. 27% said they would vote no.
2-1 want to make it optional.
Exactly. And then there are 22% who are undecided. Now, they did this poll with about 708 likely voters between July 10th and 13th, and it has a margin of error of 5%. So that's a pretty small sample size and a pretty large margin of error. But I would say if 22% of voters start to get themselves educated on this, they can probably reach at least that 52% level, if not a little bit higher. But this whole scheme of Jay Inslee and the legislative Democrats to foist this long-term care payroll tax on us by taking money out of a paycheck, giving you less to pay your bills, that I think hopefully voters wake up and make sure that they pass 2124 to repeal the long-term care payroll
tax. And three of us don't even get it, even though we get it taken out.
Mm-hmm. I'm having it taken out of mind. And then we need to figure out if it does pass, how are we all getting our money back?
Mm-hmm.
Got to make sure that that happens as well. Let's don't forget that part of the equation.
That's not going to happen.
It better. That would be theft. If it doesn't happen, that's theft. All right. Chuck Schumer makes an unsolicited claim yesterday at a press conference. Sounded a little bit strange. Let's listen.
So now that the process has played out from the grassroots bottom up, we are here today to throw our support behind Vice President Kamala Harris. Hmm. I'm clapping. You don't have to.
So that was in front of a bunch of reporters, Chuck Schumer.
Wait a minute.
What did he say?
So he said from the grassroots bottom up.
From the grassroots?
And if you have to step up. If you have to step up at a press conference and say that this is all from the grassroots and the bottom up, I'm pretty sure it's neither of those things.
It was the grassroots that Joe Biden couldn't withstand. Yeah. It wasn't Obama. It wasn't Nancy Pelosi. Mm-hmm. It wasn't Schumer. It wasn't Hakeem Jeffries. It wasn't the donors closing their wallets. Yeah. It was the grassroots.
Now, let's do one more quick one here. This is a result of the Biden decision to step down, not run again for, step down, to withdraw from the presidential race. The Justice Department yesterday announced it did have transcripts. It previously said it did not have of Biden's chats with a biographer discussed in the classified documents investigation to him by the special prosecutor, Herr.
Robert Herr.
And the Department of Justice relents and asks Robert Herr for help in responding to the flurry of FOIA requests for these records. Jonathan Turley picked up on that and said, look, the Justice Department admitted that it does have these transcripts from the President Biden conversations with his biographer, despite long denials. The DOJ position is going from legally untenable to simply unbelievable. Only the government tends to get away with this type of repeated failures of disclosure and candor. It is still maintaining an entirely meritless privilege claim over audio tapes.
Yeah. No, here's
so
what the audio...
exposed, and everyone, Ted Cruz is commenting on this, Josh Hawley, another senator, is commenting on this, saying, wow, as soon as Biden announces he's not running for re-election, now they decide that they do have these documents?
Well, here's here's what the audio tapes prove. It proves that Biden lied effortlessly and often when he said, as soon as I was told that these documents were in my possession, which I had no idea... We immediately gave them back. He knew for years that he had these documents. That's what the audio tapes prove. He refers to those documents on the tapes. And they want to go after Trump, but they dismissed any further interest in going after Obama when they caught him lying. Rick, for this week's Legendary Lyric Contest is as follows. Take your passion and make it happen. Pictures come alive. You can dance right through your life. When you hear that lyric going in or out of commercial break, be the 10th caller. Identify the song. You not only win a $50 gift card to Daniel's Broiler Restaurants, all four of their locations accepted, of course, and... you win a pair of tickets.
Lee Bryce, added to your Seaford Weekend, Marymore Park, up-and-coming artist. Marymore Park, the venue alone.
He's
just
already had a couple of number ones
yeah.
on the country music charts.
Yeah, 18 releases and had, I think he's up to 6 to number ones right now. He wrote for Garth Brooks a little bit here, Tim McGraw. You'll love his sound. Marymore, the venue, if you've never been.
So one more time on that lyric. Take your passion and make it happen. Pictures come alive. You can dance right through your life.
August 2nd, Friday night, there of Seaford Weekend.
Okay. I will be posting my statewide endorsements today. If you have not yet voted, and by the way, I hope you will vote before August 1st. I know it. Last election cycle, they say, oh, hang on to your ballot to the last minute. Hang on to that ballot. Well, a lot of people hung on to their ballot, but because they voted their ballot and then just left it hanging around, a lot of people didn't get their ballot in. They forgot about it. Oh, wait, that's in the glove box of the car. Oh, shoot, I put that on the shelf. I never got to it. Oh, it's in the garage. Anyway, people need to get in their ballots earlier. That's what people are being encouraged to do. Vote early. Get your ballot in. So, with that said, I have made my endorsements, and there's a couple of surprises here on the Carlson sample ballot. Let us start with the statewide race for United States Senator. I endorse Dr. Raul Garcia, Republican challenger to longtime incumbent, 24-year incumbent, Maria Cantwell. Let's give Maria a rest. Let's get a breath of fresh air in Washington, D.C. Dr. Raul Garcia, my endorsed choice there. For governor, no surprise on this one. My choice, Dave Reichert. He can give Bob Ferguson a very tough race, and if a Republican can get elected governor, and keep in mind, Washington's gone longer than any other state in the country in electing a Republican governor. 40 years. 40 years, despite some outstanding candidates who have run in the past, like in the year 2000, and the cycle following with Dino Rossi, et cetera, et cetera. We still haven't been able to get a Republican elected. This would be the year, because the issues that matter most are all trending in the conservative direction. Dave Reichert, who wins elections in places that most Republicans don't win, would be that candidate. So this just might, if it could happen, this would be the time to make it happen. Dave Reichert, my endorsed candidate for governor. Now let's go to Lieutenant Governor. Here's your first surprise of the day. I am endorsing incumbent Lieutenant Governor Denny Heck. I did not like Denny Heck as a congressman. He was very partisan and very combative. But as Lieutenant Governor, if you talk to Republican members of the state Senate, because the Lieutenant Governor is the president of the Senate, he's actually been in a very strident one-party rule environment. He's actually been very even-handed. He's actually been fair. He's been surprisingly impartial, which means that he can be a partisan brawler if he's in a job that allows for it, like Congress. But as lieutenant governor, he's been quite the opposite. He's been fair-minded. So that's my first surprise of the day, Denny Heck. Here's my second surprise of the day. I am dual endorsing for Secretary of State. Dale Whitaker is the Republican candidate. I like his platform for bringing back more in-person voting and not phasing it out. I also like Steve Hobbs, the incumbent Secretary of State, and I'll tell you why. When Brian Haywood was going out getting all those signatures for these six initiatives, and we were rallying, helping him, crusading, actually, on the show to get these initiatives qualified, when the signatures were turned in, everyone was on pins and needles. Okay, let's see how this new Secretary of State, how fair they are, how thorough they are when it comes to counting the signatures. They were perfectly fair. And I know you're thinking, well, should we be surprised? In an environment like that, yeah, happily surprised that the Secretary of State's office was thoroughly professional, fair, prompt, accommodating, cooperative. Steve Hobbs had that reputation as a state senator. And I also like the fact that he's got 30 years military service in the U.S. Army and National Guard. So, a dual endorsement for Secretary of State for Dale Whitaker and Steve Hobbs. What about State Treasurer? Sharon Hanek, Republican, Pierce County. She, the owner of a CPA firm, she has my support for Washington State Treasurer. What about State Auditor? Check out Matt Hawkins. Matt Hawkins, Republican candidate for State Auditor. You know, that could be a very important job. That can be a bully pulpit for keeping big government accountable, keeping big government honest. Pat McCarthy has not done a bad job as auditor, Matt Hawkins might do a better job. For Attorney General, the state's top law enforcement office, the most often used jumping off pad for the job of governor. We've had several attorneys general who've gone on to more prominent statewide offices, including Slade Gorton, including Chris Gregoire. Bob Ferguson is hoping to do it as well. Rob McKenna tried, but came up just short. For Attorney General, Pete Serrano, attorney for the U.S. Department of Energy and also the mayor of Pasco. He's up against two Democrats, Nick Brown, the current U.S. Or former U.S. attorney for a short time anyway in Western Washington, and radical State Senator Manka Dhingra, who was nailed by Brandy Cruz, embellishing her resume. She's since had to make changes. A couple of more endorsements, including for state school superintendent and commissioner of public lands and insurance commissioner. Believe it or not, we have 9 statewide elected offices. I'll have those endorsements coming for you in just a moment. It is Boeing time on the John Carlson Show. We are about 15 minutes out from our Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest. And again, your lyric for the legendary lyric contest, which is also going on simultaneous, is take your passion and make it happen. Pictures come alive. You can dance right through your life. Where have you heard that lyric before?
Amy, what you want to do?
John, as you go through your picture for the ballot for the primary, Amy, Mark, Frank, don't worry. Pierce County, apparently there's a vendor error. Ballots have not been mailed out. They won't get them until late next week. So they're being, so we're being told if you want to go online. Yeah, it's going to be close because the primary is, what, 2 weeks from yesterday? You can go to the library, Pierce County or Pierce County Elections website. Otherwise,
you can vote in person there, can't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they're going to be late. There was an error.
All right. Dinner, so. Good to know that. Good to know that. Okay, so giving you my endorsements for statewide elective offices, as you know, we have 9 of them. We have a bunch of them. For Commissioner of Public Lands, don't know why we have that as an elective office, but we do. 2 choices here. Again, a dual endorsement for Sue Kuehl Pedersen. Sue Kuehl Pedersen. She's a Republican. She's run for this office before. She would make a great lands commissioner, as well as Jamie Herrera Butler, former congresswoman from the Southwest Washington, where much of our public forest land is here in Washington. All right, off to the issue of superintendent of public instruction. This is a really important one because Chris Rakedahl, who we've had on the show a bunch of times, has presided over a very expensive failure. We've been spending more money and slipping further behind. Time for a change. David Olson is my choice. David Olson, strong endorsement for David Olson for state school superintendent, or as it's called, superintendent of public instruction. And finally, our race for insurance commissioner. There is a Bellevue state senator. Her name is Patty Kutterher, who is running for this office so she can crusade for single-payer socialized medicine at the state level. Very, very dumb, ill-advised, and very dangerous. And it's been tried by a couple other states, and it failed ignominiously.
If it comes even close to the long-term care payroll tax, that wouldn't work either, right?
So, fortunately, she's being opposed by Phil Fortunato, a state senator from Enumclaw. Phil Fortunato is my endorsed choice for insurance commissioner. There you have it. Phil Fortunato, that's all 9 statewide state offices, and then the U.S. Senate race as well. I will have these posted for you by noon today. In case you weren't able to write them down, don't worry. Radio legend is hanging on. Still haven't heard the legendary lyric for this week's contest, which you means you will be hearing it in less than 30 minutes.
Oh, before we go home, sometime.
Well, you're not leaving till later this afternoon, for crying out loud. No, it's going to be sometime during the 8 o'clock hour.
Yeah.
Here we go. Yeah. Your legendary lyric, for which you win a couple of great prizes, tickets to a great country music concert at Marymore Park, and a gift card to Daniel's Broiler.
Lee Brice, you're going to want to see that Friday, August 2nd.
Take your passion and make it happen. Pictures come alive. You can dance right through your life. There's your look. Do you recognize it? Huh? Be caller number 10 when you hear it. And since we're talking about contests, ladies and gentlemen, our Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest continues every day this summer at this time. I will give you a secret word of the morning. You have until 9 a.m. to text this word to our regular call-in and text-in line. And when you do that, you will be entered into a weekend drawing for a four-night stay in Napa.
But I helped him a drink his wine.
Wine country.
And he always had some mighty fine wine.
Mm-mm, kisses sweeter than the wine.
They've got you set up with some winery tours as well and $750 spending cash. By the way, have you ever seen the movie Sideways?
It was
the movie that made Paul Giamatti a star.
Right.
It's a wonderful indie. Wonderful. Just a wonderful indie movie. Anyway, and it's funny and it's poignant. Anyway, if you have a chance, check it out. But that is your grand prize, four nights in Napa. And if you don't want to go to Napa, then you can keep the cash. It's $3,000. So here is your word of the morning. Bottle. Bottle. B-O-T-T-L-E. Bottle. Just text the word bottle to 206-421-5757, you are entered into the contest.
Win the trip, you got a year to use it. So if you're worried about maybe smoke or fire dangers, you don't have to think about it right now.
No, it's not Oregon, it's Napa. Wildfires.
Think about the fall, wintertime, early spring. Great
wildfires
time to be in Napa.
Are crazy in Oregon right now.
Yeah, in Oregon and on down to California.
Anyway.
Smoke's coming from Canada for us.
And we have some problems up here. They had closed Highway 20. So we had some problems. Don't know if they've reopened it by now, but some problems in Chelan as well. So anyway, the word is bottle. Text it to 206-421-5757. Okay. A lot of stuff that has been going on national and local. Here on the John Carlson Show. We've been telling you now about the new challenge of Kamala Harris facing Donald Trump. But to use the wine analogy, since that's our trip of the week, it's the same old bottle of wine being poured into a new wineskin, as the Bible would put it. Kamala Harris and Joe Biden are different only in that Kamala Harris is more liberal than Joe Biden. Kamala Harris was more liberal as a U.S. senator than Bernie Sanders. If you look at voting records, she was definitively more liberal than Bernie Sanders. Do I believe that she will be formidable? Well, there's going to be fresh energy because she's not Bernie Sanders. She's not Joe Biden. With Joe Biden, there was just this air of resignation. Like Democrats knew they were going to lose. It's kind of like, I don't mean to be mean here, but it was kind of like when Bob Dole ran for president in 1996 against Bill Clinton. And this was before the Bill Clinton scandals. And everyone just knew that Clinton was going to win a second term. And remember Bob Dole at one point saying, "Where's the outrage?" And there was just every Republican knew he was going to lose. And, of course, did. And actually kind of made a living out of losing and being good humored about it. But anyway, that's Joe Biden. That's where the Democrats were with Biden. They knew he was going to lose. And so even though if you're the party of democracy, you would honor the choice of your delegates, the Democratic hierarchy thought different. And they pushed him out. And yeah, I know you think, well, Biden made the decision to leave. He didn't want to leave. He was basically told, if you don't leave, opposition to you from Democrats will continue to grow. And it's just going to get ugly. And if you lose to Donald Trump, then it's really going to be bad for your legacy. So he left. First time in American history we've ever seen a presidential candidate who had secured the necessary delegates to win. Overwhelmingly secured. 99% of the delegates were pledged to Joe Biden. And he left the race. We've never seen that in American history. The closest thing in recent American history, if you want to go back 60 years and call it recent, is Lyndon Johnson stepped out of the race for president that everyone expected he would be running in. But he left the race on the last day of March. For heaven's sakes.
We need to make a contest correction.
We have been given, this disrupts my compelling narrative.
Yeah.
We have been given a correction. I thought something weird was going on because I saw a flurry of activity in the booth.
It's like deja vu was happening.
And I'm saying, normally they're asleep this time in the morning, and here they are getting excited. What's going on? Apparently, ladies and gentlemen, I gave you the wrong word. Phil, decide whether to blame Zach or
I'll work on that.
Or Mark for this.
Well, I have taken the control that I have, and I've extended the window an extra 30 minutes to make up for this mistake.
So he's a regular Alexander Haig.
My goodness.
You have till 9:30 to enter the word dirt.
Dirt. I gave you the wrong word. Let me give you the real dirt on the real word. Dirt. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. I did not know.
We have a folder full of the words.
I noticed.
And I think that maybe you just forgot to eliminate the page from yesterday.
Yes.
And so
we need to place blame on the person who's supposed to tear out the old page.
That's what we got to do.
Wait a minute.
No congressional hearing. Look how fast we correct it. You get a bonus of 30 minutes extra. Deadline 9:30 now, says Young Zach.
We're not like the Secret Service. It doesn't take us forever to correct the error. Okay. So I apologize, folks. Yes, I read the wrong word. I noticed the phone's ringing, and I'm guessing listeners said, "Hey, wasn't that the word you used yesterday?" So really, we give credit to our listeners for alerting us.
We have a lot of listening listeners.
So let me take it all back. The word that you need for the contest is dirt, D-I-R-T. Right now, John Carlson feels like dirt. All right. They say use it in a sentence. D-I-R-T. There you go. Text the word dirt. to 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. That's our new word, and you will have until 9:30 as young Zach calls an audible and extends the time you have to call in the right word.
He's Dirk. Watching the entries, too, since you announced the old word at 8 o'clock, just to see how many come in. And okay. We'll figure something else. We'll figure that out.
All right,
don't
folks.
Worry about that.
So there you go. There's your word, dirt. All right. And by the way, at 11 o'clock, there will be another new word for the 11 o'clock hour. And then at 1 o'clock during Lars's show, there's going to be another new word. And then at 4 o'clock during Ari Hoffman's show, another new word. Okay, so with the decks cleared and everybody entering the contest with the word dirt, okay, texting it to 206-421-5757, we get to the crux of what I wanted to talk about this segment, which is here's all Donald Trump needs to do to win a massive majority over Kamala Harris. Just keep coming back to one issue, the border. Because there are several different aspects of that issue. Like the building the wall, like the Remain in Mexico program, like giving freebies to people who come here illegally. Kamala Harris is the Biden White House border czar. She gets to wear this issue. It's the one title she was given in addition to vice president. You're the border czar. So we have seen historic, unprecedented catastrophe at the southern border because of the Biden-Harris policies for which she has been the border czar. I know it's tempting to come at her on a lot of other fronts, but just focus on an issue that people care about, that the Biden White House has demonstrably failed, and which you can convincingly, through her own comments, through her own stated policy positions, you can make her wear that issue. As they say in politics, going after her on the issue of the border, quote, has the added virtue of being true. Close quote. Kamala Harris is completely vulnerable on an issue people care a lot about this year. If people didn't care about the border, well, then, all right, fine. She would probably weather the storm. They do care about the border. And everything about Kamala Harris's position on the border shows how unserious she is. You know, she's called for giving free health care to illegal immigrants. She has called for welcoming all people who come here from other countries and say that they are refugees, even though they are coming here for the same reason, 9 out of 10 times that everyone else who immigrates here legally comes, which is a better life and a fresh start, better country. So they've got her on this issue. And if they just run this focused campaign using her own words, using her own positions, there's her general incoherence on a lot of other things and her silliness and her annoying laughter and murmurings about how she really got started in California politics and all that. And I understand the temptation. You know, forget all of the shallow and salacious stuff. Stick with what's important. Stick with the substantive. Stick with what people care about. She is America's leading border extremist. Let me say that one again. Kamala Harris, America's leading border extremist. No one is more responsible for the state of our border than the border czar in the Biden White House. And that's her. That is how Donald Trump wins a 38-state landslide. We'll give the Democrats the other 12 states. But Donald Trump can win 38 states by just pounding that issue. There's no way she can wriggle out of it. The policy results are there for everyone to see. Everyone knows what a failure it is. So there you have it. That's how Donald Trump wins a resounding victory in November. Not by focusing on 20 different things. Focus on one major issue and several different aspects of it. She's wrong on every conceivable aspect of it. It's 20 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVH. Still not the legendary lyric. But if you want your word of the day, again, your word of the day to clear up any confusion is dirt, D-I-R-T, dirt. Text the word dirt to 206-421-5757. Philip J. Vandervoort III, right around the corner, his favorite segment of the day, social media. From take your passion and make it happen. Pictures come alive. You can dance right through your life. One more time. Take your passion and make it happen. Pictures come alive. You can dance right through your life. When you hear that song going into or out of commercial break, be caller number 10. Some nice prizes coming your way. And again, we have our ongoing word of the morning for the Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest. That word, I gave you the wrong word initially. We quickly discovered the mistake and clarified. The word of the morning is dirt, D-I-R-T. Text the word dirt to 206-421-5757. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, your favorite segment, social media from socialists. What do you got?
Sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. We got to go to Britain for this one. They have a criminal court sentencing in Britain. CNN is reporting on this and posting the story on social media. And it says five activists from the group Just Stop Oil. This is an environmental campaign. Five defendants ages 58 to 22 have been sentenced to jail or prison for blocking an M25 highway that encircles London. This happened for four successive days back in November of 2022. The judge at the sentencing ordered a prison sentence of 5 years for one 58-year-old co-founder of the group Just Stop Oil. The other four co-defendants all received four-year prison sentences for blocking freeways.
I like it.
Now, I bring this up because in the city of SeaTac, they're with the case of, I think it's 46 defendants, the last number that I had, that are charged for blocking the ramp, or pardon me, the driveway up to the
SeaTac Airport,
the terminal at SeaTac Airport here earlier this spring in a pro-Gaza, anti-Israel, pro-Hamas demonstration.
And so
But this was all in just outside of London, apparently.
London. Okay.
On the M25 highway in Britain. So 4 and 5 year prison sentences for activists from the group Just Stop Oil. Good. I think that's, I'm guessing that it must have been pretty severe in Britain. I mean, Britain's not known for handing out
tough sentences.
Incredibly long jail sentences.
Basically, Just Stop Oil is now going to just stop blocking streets and roads.
Yeah. And then the group Just Stop Oil there's a mother of a jailed Just Stop Oil campaigner that is now upset that daughter is going to be in jail and might miss brother's wedding. So a little fallout there, but you know,
I guess you
actions
need to
have
think
consequences.
Ahead.
Actions have consequences.
I guess you need to think ahead.
There we go. All righty.
It is coming up on 29 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Man, it's been a crazy, busy morning. And when we come back, a controversy. Does this ever end? More controversy over jail capacity, jail space? This in the city of Seattle. We'll tell you what that is all about. Plus, why Kamala Harris is on an extraordinarily short leash right now. Plus, Joe Biden getting ready to address the nation this evening. Benjamin Netanyahu will shortly be speaking to a joint session of Congress. A busy news morning. And we're back at the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 24 minutes to 9 o'clock. All right. What issues do people care most about here in Washington? What national issues? So I'm kind of combining the local with national here. Well, the Washington poll recently surveyed voters. It was conducted by Survey USA, and it was sponsored by the Seattle Times, King 5 TV, and the University of Washington's Center for an Informed Public. And what they found was that the issue that people care most about in Washington, and it's by a fairly large margin, is the cost of living. The cost of living is the number one issue on the minds of most voters. There is a split between the parties, and there's independents in the mix here as well. We'll explain where they come down. But Survey USA interviewed 900 Washington State adults from July 10th through the 13th. This was after the first presidential debate and before the attempt on President Trump's life. Likely voters were asked to select their single top concern. So they weren't given a list of issues, and then they said, that one. This is asking people to say what they are most concerned about. So they weren't prompted. They were simply asked, what's your top concern? One out of four one out of three Republican voters said the cost of living. One out of four independent voters, more than that actually, said the cost of living. And a much smaller share of Democrats selected cost of living, 18%, almost half of the proportion of Republicans. Now, the reason why this is very good news for Republicans is that many of the state issues that are going to be on the ballot directly relate to people's pocketbooks. There is an initiative that would bring the price of gasoline down about 43 cents a gallon, the so-called the Climate Commitment Act, repealing the Climate Commitment Act, repealing the artificial 43-cent gas tax. the mandatory long-term care program, making it optional. That would save people part of their payroll tax. They've been taking this money out of your paychecks. You might not even know it if you don't examine your pay stub. And then there's the capital gains tax, which even a lot of people who don't qualify for capital gains taxes, even they think it is not a good idea to have a capital gains tax in Washington. So that, and then the natural gas initiative that we crusaded for, that will affect how much you pay for the price of energy. So all four of those ballot measures affect your cost of living. The second issue that came up is saving democracy. Saving democracy. The issue there is that what does that really mean? It means different things to different people. But 28% of Democrats selected protecting democracy as their top concern. I'm guessing that for most Democrats, protecting democracy means defeating a candidate you don't like, Donald Trump. Among Republicans, the issue of democracy is just 6%. So protecting democracy because it means different things to different people is very amorphous. And again, it shows the strength, the importance, the power of the issue of high cost of living. The issue that tied for third place was border security and abortion. So a major issue for Republicans and a major issue for Democrats tied for third place. I have told you several times that abortion should not even be an issue in Washington state because the Dobbs decision 2 years ago didn't change a word of Washington's abortion law. It still hasn't. There's been no change, and there doesn't need to be a change in Washington's abortion law if you are a pro-abortion rights voter. The law has been set since 1991. The Dobbs decision simply said that decisions on where to draw the line at the government protecting life in the womb belongs to elected officials who are accountable to voters for where they choose to draw that line. And because the voters chose where to draw that line, not only 1991, but before that in 1970, Washington has been living by the standard of the Dobbs decision for 54 years. So abortion shouldn't even be an issue. But again, it's all about symbolism. Even among Democrats, the cost of living, the high cost of living, was their second major issue. It was more important than abortion. That is why, again, this is going to be, this can be a good election for Republican office holders or candidates. So that is where you see Washington voters. Again, the three top issues are, number one, the high cost of living. Number two, protecting democracy. Number three, secure the border and abortion are tied. The issue of crime also emerges. So this, again, this could be a very fertile, very positive election for those who are promising change. So anyway, Philip J. Vandervoort III, do we have a contest winner for our legendary lyric contest?
Michael in Gig Harbor, congratulations. He's the legendary lyrics winner. Not to be confused with the Take the Trip or Keep the Cash.
Yes.
We got the right song.
That's
right?
A different contest altogether. But Michael in Gig Harbor, 10th caller, heard the legendary lyrics.
Flashdance, What a Feeling.
That was a little good. Take Your Passion and...
Lyrics by Keith Forsey and the singer, Irene Cara. By the way, I must say, very sad what became of Irene Cara.
Mm-hmm.
She started off as a superstar in the movie Fame. She sang the title track,
and
she wrote another song, Out Here on My Own, and then came Flashdance. She got into a fight over the royalties.
Mm-hmm. It happens.
And
it happens.
Claimed that she was being blackballed, kept out of the industry because of the lawsuit, which she won, by the way.
It happens. A lot of history there.
And the onset of mental illness, she died a few years ago, a recluse. Yeah. Most people in her neighborhood had no idea that she was Irene Cara, and most people never saw her. She rarely came out of her house.
Yeah, that's something.
But boy, did she start with great promise.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, normally we play this song when we have a three strikes update, i.e. we've got another three striker we got in the net. That's not why we're playing it today. We are known, as Mark Christopher has abundantly illustrated over the years, as a place where a lot of rock stars end up retiring.
Yes, true.
Okay? They come here, even if, or semi-retire here. And one of them just passed away. Jerry Miller, the lead guitarist for the 60s group Moby Grape, and one of the architects of what is called the San Francisco Sound, he died Sunday in Tacoma at the age of 81.
Yeah.
News of his death was shared by friends and family via social media.
Yeah, this is some of the Moby Grape sound. Eric Clapton's not the greatest, but the best guitarist he ever thought. And he made the top 500 best guitarists all time. A Northwest guitar guy, Jerry Miller.
Well, yeah. Jerry Miller, according to Rolling Stone magazine, is the 68th greatest guitarist of all time.
Oh, it's top 100.
He made
pretty good list.
The list of the top 100. He was number 68.
Yeah.
That's high praise coming from Eric Clapton, who's way up there on that list.
Yeah. This is a time, you know, right before Hendrix and others from the area as well. Jerry Miller here, born in Tacoma. Yeah.
And then he played on guitar on the I Fought the Law song by Bobby Fuller 4 before he got to Moby Grape.
He contributed to Bobby Fuller. They used it in the hit, and then he later toured with Bobby Fuller. As here's the guy that created the guitar lick for I Fought the Law.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty memorable guitar sound.
One
too.
More ad. A band that was doing really well around the World's Fair started at Parker's 1959, was the warm up act for Bobby Darin. The Frantics. And again, Jerry Miller had some time with this great Northwest rock and roll band. Everybody knows Fog Cutter. What a perfect title for a song here.
the band called?
The Frantics.
The Frantics.
Neil Rush would be a part of this eventually. I mean, the rotating groups of Northwest rock and roll.
How about that? Again, nobody knows more about the Northwest rock scene than Mark Christopher.
I'm everybody's little brother. And a lot of them tune in here to make sure we're accurate and we keep the sounds alive.
And a listener about Jerry Miller's passing brought this to our attention, Pete in Burien.
Thank you, Pete.
And he mentioned it on Monday, and we were doing so much stuff related to the Biden decision.
Yeah.
So we got another phone call from Pete, and thank you, Pete, and our well wishes to the Miller family.
We listen to our listeners.
Yeah, we do.
Okay? You are our customers.
Part
and
of the
you matter a lot to us, and great content, great ideas, great suggestions often come from our listeners. What was the biggest hit of Moby Grape, would you say, Mark?
Oh.
They had a bunch of them, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, Jerry Miller, their lead guitarist, died Sunday at the age of 81 here in Tacoma, Washington. Rest in peace and thank you, Jerry Miller, from Moby Grape. It is 8:55. It's going to be a gorgeous day. Get out there, enjoy it. Let's talk again in 21 short hours.